Howard. Thank y'all for singing at both of our services today. Let me ask you a question to get started here. How many of you ever, when you were a child, ran away from home? Now, I'm not talking about you had to get all the way to another country. How many of you ran away from home at some time or another? It would be interesting to get to hear some of your stories, you know, what happened, how far you got, and things like that. Believe it or not, I never ran away from home. I find that amazing that I never ran away from home as a child. But I would do this. If my mom, you know, did something to hurt my feelings, you know, I would go and hide somewhere. I would hide, and a lot of times I would try to do it where I could watch them. And I just wanted to see their lives fall apart when they realized how miserable life was going to be without my presence. You know, and they never came looking for me, I do remember my sister, when I was up visiting a couple of weeks ago, I asked her about that, and one time she, quote, ran away, and she got to the fence at the back of our backyard, and Mom came out, and she had just carried some clothes out of the house under her arms. She hadn't packed them in a suitcase, and my mom, you know, very practical woman, she said, get back in that house before you mess those clean clothes up, you know, and made her go back in the house. She didn't even let the girl run away. Didn't even get her out of the yard. Look at this note that I found on the internet where a child in Great Britain had run away, was going to run away from home. She wrote this to her. It says, to Mom, I'm going to run away because you're being mean to me. If you want to know where I am, I'm at Filet's or Fillet's or the Co-op or McDonald's. See you never again in my life, Daisy. You know, running away is always about the away part. You know, we're not necessarily running to something. We don't give much thought to the to. We're running away, and it's usually from our parents is what we were usually getting away from. That's why when we don't give much thought to the to, we usually just get to the end of the driveway or the fence at the backyard, and we figure, you know, it's not going to work too well, and we just spend about a day or a couple hours, then we go back home. But that's child stuff. We adults, we never run away, do we? Well, let me ask you, have you ever run from God? Have you ever run away from God? Just think about that for a moment. You know, when you turned 16, you'd been totally happy in the youth group, going to church, going where the church and places that your parents wanted you to go. But all of a sudden, you turn 16, you get that license, you figure out you got some freedom, some other places you can go, and it's all of a sudden, church is not fun anymore. God is not relevant. The youth minister doesn't do anything interesting. I don't like the kids at youth group. Remember that? All of a sudden, we had some excuses we just didn't have the months before. Or how about when we start running after that person or that girl or that guy that we know we have no business being with, and the people try to warn us, our parents and our youth minister and ministers, they try to warn us, but all of a sudden we decide, I'm not so sure God is that big a deal. All of a sudden that God is out of touch, and he just doesn't understand that this is the greatest love that there's ever been. No one else has ever felt about that young man or that woman, the young woman, the way that I do. Or how about when we pretend that God is out of touch, and so we figure that he doesn't really need or have any say-so in our lives. Well, you know, we can run from God and just run on an issue. You can still stay close to God, you know, and come to church and do all those things, but you've got that one issue that God, you say to God, keep your hands off of this. God, I'm going to pray to you because I need your help on this, but we're going to leave that alone. We're going to leave that right over here to the side. We're not going to deal with that. So we just run in areas. How about this one? They made me go to church when I was growing up, so now I don't go to church. And I always thought that was funny. So they made you eat too, but I hadn't seen you give that up either, you know. Sometimes we run because we're just afraid we're going to miss something. We're going to miss the fun. You know, you've been there. We're just afraid we're going to miss out on all the fun stuff's going on. So we pretend or we convince ourselves that God really isn't there, or God's not important, or God's not for you. And we just think, then we think, you know, well, I'm going to go do all these things. Then later, I'm going to come back to God, and everything's going to be all right. You know, we somehow think that God's sitting up there going, how did they figure that out? They found a loophole in my plan. You know, no, it's not like that. Philip Yancey said, we confuse life with God sometimes. We confuse life with God, and we run from life, but we blame it on God. You know how, so your career didn't turn out the way you wanted it to, your marriage didn't, your family didn't, your children worry you to death, and they don't turn out to be, you know, those loving children that you wanted to be. So we blame God and say, why would I follow a God like that when he's done this to me, when really it's just life that those things happen. No, we adults never run from God, do we? Yeah. The next 3 weeks, we're going to take a look at the most famous runner in the Bible, Jonah, and how he ran from God. Now, for many, this is a cute story about a man that's been swallowed by a fish. And that's about as far as the story goes. Or some even have trouble believing this story. They think it was just a story that was made up that God told him to make a good message, but it's more of a myth. Well, first, I hope as we go through these 3 weeks that you'll see that this story is more than just about a guy getting eaten by a fish. It reveals the true character of God. You're going to see a character of God in this story that if you haven't looked deep enough in this story that you've missed up to now. And secondly, I hope that you'll see that this story is real, that Nineveh was a real place. It wasn't Narnia, it was Nineveh. It was a real place, a historical place. It's referred to in other places in the Old Testament. Jesus even referred to it in the New Testament. So if you say, I believe in Jesus, I just don't think this story is real, then you got a problem there too, because Jesus considered it a real event. And this other thing here, just something very small. You know, God created us, and we have created a machine that will go underwater and keep people alive. Large numbers of people. It's called a nuclear submarine. It can stay underwater for about 6 months, never come up. And let's just say, if God can create us, and we can create something like a submarine, let's cut God a break. He can make a fish that can swallow somebody and keep them alive for 3 days. So let's just give him a little break here on that. Jonah was a prophet. A prophet was someone who was sent by God to deliver the message, to speak on God's behalf, deliver a message, to tell the people what he wanted them to hear. Now, it wasn't always a popular job, because you and I know that sometimes people don't want to hear what God's got to say, and they take it out on the messenger of what God has to say. Most prophets were sent to Israel or to Judah, people who already believed in God. Jonah gets the job of going to a nation, a very evil nation, Assyria. This is the capital city of Assyria, Nineveh. Now, it's not a very good thing. It's going to be bad. It's tough enough being a prophet, but when you go to a country like Assyria, it is going to be bad. You can look this up on the internet yourself. I did some reading about it. Assyria was a culture that was known for being one of the most cruel and gruesome kingdoms there have ever been. They were some of the most cruel people the earth has ever known. Not to get into too much detail, but when they conquered people, they invented ways of torture, invented ways of beating a people down. Some of the things that they would do, they had discovered and had become masters at this, that when they wanted to, they could actually skin a person alive and it wouldn't kill them, so that they would suffer longer, and they would hang their skin up for people to see. They cut the arms off of the soldiers that they conquered so they could never fight again. It was just very cruel people. Now, you would think this would be the reason Jonah would not want to go. We're going to learn in a couple of weeks that this really is not what is mentioned. We're going to learn that in a couple of weeks. But that'd be enough for me to say no. But God says to Jonah, go. Jonah says to God, no. And that's what we're going to look at here. Jonah chapter 1, verses 1 through 3 says this. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai. Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. After paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. Look at this map here. This kind of give you an idea of what was happening here. Between Nineveh and Joppa, Israel's in there. It's a little small area. It's there. He, instead of going north to Nineveh to obey God, he heads down to Joppa, gets on a boat, and you see he sails all the way to Tarshish. And as you can see, that's modern-day Spain, and that's about as far as you could go in the shipping routes of that day. So he was going as far away from God and what God had told him to do as possible. But I don't think Jonah thought this through too well. Because, stick with me here, think about this. You already believe in God, the creator of the heavens and the earth, the lands and the seas, and you're going to get on a boat to run away from God, to hide from God. Not too good a plan, Jonah. But we learned something here about runners from Jonah. Runners run toward trouble. And I don't mean in a noble way, like a soldier runs to the trouble, runs to the front line. I'm talking about run to trouble like a child who runs into the street, into traffic, runs towards the trouble. And what do? When we rebel against God, do we play it safe? Oh, no. We run towards trouble. We rebel against God, and what do? We get into a relationship. We get married. Very safe thing to do. We start drinking or drinking more. We start spending or spending a lot more. We go into debt. We start running with a rougher crowd. We do all these things that are not very wise decisions. And why do we make such unwise decisions? Because when we run from God, we run from the source of wisdom and the source of truth. We run away. We're not only running from God, we're running from the things that will guide us in life. You know, just think about it in a very practical way like this. When you've run from God, one of the things you do is you run away from the people who would have held you accountable. You stop going to Sunday school, small groups. You maybe stop coming to church. Those people in your lives who would say, "Hey, Greg, can we do lunch? I just don't like the direction. It's something I need to talk to you about. I don't like the direction you're going here." We stop taking their phone calls. We keep making excuses. We start making unwise decisions because we're running away from our source of truth and wisdom. We unplug from those sources. Look at verse 4. Then the Lord. I want to stop right there just for a moment and remember that. Then the Lord. This is all that's taking place. Then the Lord. That's the change in direction of wind. That's standing there on a quiet, still day, and all of a sudden, a large gust of wind comes along. It's that uh-oh in life. You go, uh-oh, something's about to happen. It's the bugle playing. The cavalry is coming. It's something that takes place that says, uh-oh, something's changing. These are the moments in our lives that God sends when we're running that says, I'm not going to let this go unnoticed. He's going to get our attention. Go on with verse 4. It says, then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid, and each cried out to his own God, and they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. But Jonah had gone below deck, where he lay down and fell into a deep sleep. The captain went to him and said, how can you sleep? Get up and call on your God. Maybe he will take notice of us, and we will not perish. Now, I find this the strangest thing in the whole story. This is harder for me than the fish, that Jonah's down below sleeping. Sleeping at a time like this. And the captain says, basically, are you crazy? Are you serious? You're sleeping when we're fighting to save our lives here? It was apparent to the captain and not to Jonah that his behavior was way off base. And this is another fact that we learn about runners. Runners are often the last to know. The last to make the connection, to connect the dots between the turmoil in our life and the fact that we're running from God. It's so easy for us to see that in others, aren't we? We can just say, oh man, can't you connect the dots? Since you started running with this person, you got in trouble. Since you quit doing this, it's been nothing but heartache in your life. But it's so hard for us to see in our own, when we look in our own mirrors. It's hard to see. And this is a sobering fact I want to mention here. When we're running from God, the people that care about us the most, the people you love the most, they notice it, but you won't listen, and they will be hurt the most because of it. Let me say that again. When we run from God, and all we're doing is making excuses, the ones that we love the most are the ones who are hurt first and are hurt worse. And that's a scary thing to think about. Well, the captain and crew, they pray. They invite Jonah up on deck and says, "We're praying to all our gods. You pray to yours. Maybe he'll save us." Then they cast lots to find out who, this was an ancient way of making decisions, to see who's caused this great storm, and it falls on Jonah, and they say, "What did you do to cause such a storm?" Verses 9 and 10, he says, "He answered, 'I am a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven who made the sea.'" Not such a good idea. You go, "What was I thinking?" "Who made the sea and the land. This terrified them, and they asked, 'What have you done?'" They knew that he was running away from the Lord because he had already told them so. And Jonah says, "The only thing you're going to do to save the ship is to throw me overboard." And they say, "No, we're not going to do that." And they keep fighting to save it. I think the reason that they do this is because they're going, if he's the God of the sea, we're not going to, and he's already this angry, we're not going to throw one of his prophets overboard. But they continue to try to save the ship, but finally they reach a point where it says it's the only thing left to do. They throw Jonah overboard. Verse 15. "Then they took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm." And the picture here is an instant calm. Jonah is thrown off the ship, an instant calm. Now, once again, this is just speculation. I don't know what Jonah did when he was thrown into the sea. Now, all I can say is if it was me, if you threw me overboard into the sea, I'm not going to put my arms down by my side and just say, "Okay, I'm just going to give up and sink." I'm going to swim. I'm going to swim as long as I can, as hard as I can. So if Jonah did that, if you imagine, he's still at the top of the water, the top of the sea here, as he's thrown overboard and the sea's calm. And you wonder, those guys on the boat go, "Wow, should we pick him back up?" And before they even have a chance to answer that, this is what it says in verse 17. "But the Lord," there's another one of those action moments, those events, "but the Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was inside the fish 3 days and three nights." I don't know if they got to see this happen or not, but if you can imagine seeing Jonah down in the water and then a fish just comes up and swallows him. You know, if you just see that happen. We were on vacation this September down at Myrtle Beach. And Janice and I on the beach, we noticed the lifeguards getting everybody out of the water. And I even asked, I said, "What are you doing that for?" He said, "There's a school of fish working its way down the ocean here along the shore." And it says a lot of times when there's fish, they're predators, sharks. And so we're standing there watching. All of a sudden, you see these fish, you know, just, all of a sudden the sharks start breaking. They're coming out of the water. They're attacking these fish, you know. We did just what I figured they did on that ship, you know. Did you see that? And we're watching this. And I didn't even get back in the water, forget it. I didn't even want to take a shower after that. I didn't even want to be near water after seeing these sharks do this. Well, the next day it turns out that the Harris, Irvin and Susan, and all of their family, their vacations were overlapping with ours. We went down and spent the last day down with them on the beach. And the same thing happens. The fish are coming along. The lifeguard's getting everybody out of the water. And the sharks start doing the same thing. And we're just standing there. We can't believe it. I've never seen anything like that before. Kevin had gone back to the cottage. He doesn't know this is all happening. And you know Kevin, he's such a cut up. He comes running past us, throws his sunglasses off, is running towards the water. And I'm going, he's just being funny. And then Trent says, he doesn't know. He didn't hear all that stuff was happening. So he runs right past this crowd of people watching and dives into the ocean. Lifeguards, boop, boop. You know? They're getting him out of the water and stuff, you know. But I have to wonder, to see, if did they see that fish come up out of the water and just take Jonah away? But Jonah is gone. I want to read a passage of scripture for you just now that Jonah figured out, connected the dots, figured this out when the fish got hold of him. It's Psalm 139, and I'm just going to read a few verses, but I'm telling you, read Psalm 139 sometime today. It is one awesome passage of Scripture. And I'm going to ask you if you'll do this for me right now, if you'll just close your eyes and think of David as he wrote this. Just close your eyes and listen as I read. "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. Isn't that beautiful? Awesome that David was writing that and thinking that God is everywhere. Jonah learned what all runners eventually learn. You can run from God, but you can't outrun God. You can run from God, but you can't outrun Him. Haven't you learned that? I have. When I've tried to run, you can't run away from God. Andy Stanley says he doesn't picture God chasing us. He pictures God already being there when we get there to where we're running. And either way, it's that picture. God is there prepared for our running. For Jonah, he had prepared a fish. For us, he prepares something else. And throughout the Bible, God goes to great lengths to paint a picture to show us how he wants us to view us and view him in a relationship. He uses the picture of a father and his children. God being the father. It's the best analogy he could come up, that he could use to convey to us how much he loves us. Proverbs 3:11-12 says, my son, do not despise the Lord's discipline and do not resent his rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those he loves as a father the son he delights in. You know, I believe that so many people, most people even, when they read something like this, or they think about that God is just looking to catch you doing something wrong. Aha! I got you. You thought you could get away with that. Now it's payback time. But as this passage from Proverbs shows, it's not about that. He's back. He says because he loves us, he takes hold of us at times like that. It's not about payback. It's about bring back. It's about win back. You see, about 700 years after this story of Jonah, God took care of the payback, the punishment, when he sent his son to die on the cross, to take the punishment for anyone who would wave the white flag, surrender their lives to God, quit running, accept him as their Lord and Savior. And no matter where you are in your life, I don't even need to know that you're running on a different issue or what issue that is. I know this is true. God's already there waiting for you. He's waiting. You can't outrun him. We just can't do it. He's going to provide those then the Lords, those times, the changing winds to get our attention. He's going to provide those people that when we've started running, recognize it and say, hey, can we have lunch? Can we talk? And what I can pray for is that you will listen, that you will call them back, that you'll listen to those around you who are speaking for God there to get your attention to stop running. Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk about more about that. And Jonah, we're going to see where Jonah next week does come to stop running and what it took to get him to stop running. But then how it changed. And I don't know, maybe there's somebody here today that already recognizes I'm running hard from God, and I've been running too long, and you want to accept him as your Savior today and make this your day to turn back to him. You're going to have that opportunity. We're going to sing here in just a moment. But also, if you're running but you just realize you can't bring yourself to stop running yet, I hope this week you'll be thinking about that you can't outrun God, not because of his vengeance, but because of his love. That's the lengths he'd go to bring you back. And then we'll just pick up again next week or at. Let's stand together and sing.